Welcome to the Sweetland podcast series, Topics in Writing. Each episode, we feature interviews with guests at the Sweetland Seminar about topics in the teaching of writing.
I'm T. Hetzel, and today I'll be speaking with Norbert Elliott of New Jersey Institute of Technology about connecting assignments and assessment. Born in Fayetteville, North Carolina, Norbert Elliott was raised in New Orleans, Louisiana. He attended Immaculate Heart of Mary Elementary School and Brother Martin High School. He received both his BA and MA from the University of New Orleans and his PhD from the University of Tennessee. He has taught at Mercer County Community College, Rider University, the College of New Jersey, and Texas A&M University at Commerce. Since 1988, he has been a member of the Department of Humanities at New Jersey Institute of Technology. His research and teaching interests cluster in the following areas: history, practice, and theory of writing assessment, theory and practice of technical communication, biography, theory and history of environmental rhetoric, empirical research methods, technology and education. Norbert, thank you for talking with me today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, well, it's lovely to see you. Norbert, when did you become interested in writing assessment?
When I graduated from University of Tennessee in 1981, I had taken my PhD and written a dissertation on allegory in the novels of Isaac Bashevis Singer. And I really thought that my career was going to be a literary scholar. Shortly after that, I began actual teaching, and I found enormously interested in, at that time, often unexplored world of how students composed. There was very little that I had known about that. Dixie Goswami was at the University of Tennessee during that time. But there was not a composition emphasis there. So I was fortunate enough then to spend a little time at the Educational Testing Service. And some formal empirical work was being done there in writing assessment, Mary Fowles and other people during those days. And I got bitten. And I became absolutely hooked on the relationship between teaching and assessment and stayed with that work throughout my career.
What hooked you?
You read in my biography my background, and I guess very few people put the grammar schools they went to in
yes.
their biography. And I always want to make clear that I come from a striver's background. My grandfather was a carpenter. My dad was a factory worker. Without some of these empirical measurements that we now hold so critical, my generation might have been working at riverfront and factory. We came from schools that were not well-known schools, and we were able to get into state schools and academies because we did well on some of these tests, and then graduate schools after that. So while I want to be part of the criticism of these tests and think that they can always do better, I also want to be true to my roots. Down south, we say you dance with them what brought you. And what brought me in many of these things was that world of standardized testing. And for my generation, I'm 62 now, a lot of those people we find in the academies were brought in with these tests. And so I thought it would be interesting to launch a career that related teaching and testing in a much more solidified way. And that's what I do.
Is it possible then to talk about assignments and assessment in the writing classroom, Norbert? Or is it first necessary to think about the history or how it works in a larger system like ETS?
Well, you know, both. You need to have both. But for the student sitting in her seat, I think that the thing that testing tells us is let's get some good behavioral objectives out for the student so the student knows where she's going in advance.
So what can students do?
Yeah, what can students do, and where do we want to bring them? I think that there's an emphasis from the writing studies community, my group, on rhetorical knowledge, and I think that's the magic that my generation has brought to it. You know, believing firmly in audience, believing in firmly in many ways to address a topic, believing deeply in contextualization. So when I started, though, there was no World Wide Web. and the emphasis was all on print in a discourse form called the essay. But as you well know, the emphasis now is on multimodal composing. And we want students to do all those good things and develop their blog voices and to do their podcasts and put e-portfolios together and find their place in the world by a rhetorical presence that is digitally informed. And so I think that specifying those things out for students is critically important at the level of the syllabus. And I think that designing our assessment of those students based on, let's call them traits, the things that we really want them to do, to vary their voices across audience, to use grammatical word choice, mechanical constructions creatively, I think we want to let them know that we want them to experiment with that and that we're not defaulting to an elementalist vision of writing based on grammar and mechanics.
That sounds so important, and it sounds like what you're saying instructors can do is to be transparent and put these almost as bullet points in a syllabus.
Yes, and the course management platforms that we all now deal with, whether they're something like Moodle or something like Blackboard, these things are enormously rich learning environments. So we can really specify by assignment, forget the idea of print, but what we want students to do on week 13 of the course can be known to a student at the point the student registers for the course. And that's enormous because that creates a learning environment for the student.
Because the student has a holistic idea of what is expected of
from
them,
beginning
or how
to end.
Be moving.
And the points the points with those things as well. I have a colleague named Asao Enyue, and he does learning contracts in addition to this, and the student specifies up front what she's prepared to do. And so if you hook that in with a digital environment, wow, by the time the student gets through the first week of course, she really knows what she's going to do. Combine that with some instructor podcasts where any time, day or night, if the student didn't make the class because she had to work that evening, which isn't entirely possible for striver schools like yours here at Michigan or mine at NJIT, then the student can meet those things that are respected in the class and doesn't have to depend on class presence. So the flipped classroom, multimodal learning, I think, is an important part too.
And these podcasts would be the lectures.
The lectures that
feature you giving the lecture, talking or talking through in a more, perhaps seemingly a more informal setting.
Right, and more important, not me, but other students talking about how things have gone in the past. It's always fun to bring back students who have done well in the course to talk to other students.
Really? So you feature guest students?
Sure. A lot of the podcasts that I have are students making presentations to other students. And so when it comes time for the oral presentation in a course, they can see how the students the past semester did.
So why is that more effective?
I think that there's a big gap between what a 62-year-old man says is expected from a student and watching another student actually perform that. If they see other students doing it, then they get it, and then they realize they can do it too, and there's a tremendous confidence builder in that. So it's a complete learning environment. A student just doesn't take a class. A student's part of a course in, let's say, composing in multimodal environments that 300 students have taken before them and 300 students will after. So it's a continuum. And that's, I think, very heartening to students. And students who really want to do well can do exceedingly well in such environments.
And a community of learning. It feels like the way that you're speaking of it, Norbert, it takes it from this idea of the student as customer or consumer, which seems to be a trend, but places them in a community of learning, a community of knowledge across a continuum.
And I think that for those of us in education who are interested in assessment, that's our role, isn't it? I think we have to propose an alternative vision of what assessment can be. Not a multiple choice test, not something that's taken on one day, not something that's scored by strangers, but something that's done in a university, a college, a two-year college, a community. And that assessment can be validly done in a community and reported out. And my fond hope is that 20 years from now, there will be none of these tests, and that what we will have is communities reporting out on how their students are doing to a wide variety of shareholders, from board of trustee members to parents, so that folks can understand assessment can be done locally and must be done locally.
And what would these new vehicles of assessment, what would it look like in the future, Norbert, or what are you imagining?
Well, I think the only person who should really be assessing a student is the student's teacher. So I imagine, let's extend our community metaphor, I imagine groups of teachers getting together, forming communities, doing things together, and then engaging in the formal reporting mechanisms that we imagine come out of educational measurement. Score reliability, for example. Relationship of what the students can do in the course to course grades. Finding out what a student who took a multimodal course is doing two semesters, four semesters, finding out what that student's doing upon graduation. These are things that universities, colleges, community colleges, are best prepared to undertake because they can longitudinally study how students are doing. And I can very well imagine that kind of enormous validity, let's call it contextual validity, becoming an important part as we move past the second decade of the 21st century.
I'm wondering, does the nature of, because thinking about changing the assessment, Norbert, how does that change the assignments? Perhaps, like, can we go back to the classroom in particular? Because I know we've been talking holistically. Mm-hmm. Are there things that an individual instructor can do in one, for example, writing classroom?
Sure. So let's talk about the individual, varying genre. That's a huge thing. In the print environment, we can only imagine limited discourse forms, can't we? We can imagine an essay that's written to the teacher. We can imagine a diary, for example, but the reader is probably going to be the teacher as well. But imagine having a student do a blog and making the blog a public blog on WordPress, for example. Well, then the student is really developing a persona that goes on the web, a voice to go with that. The student's probably using images as well as writing. Maybe the student's putting her own voice up there at certain times. So let's imagine getting rid of the term paper. And let's imagine blogs being put up. Let's imagine students making their own podcast, e-portfolios. You know, the work of people like Carolyn Miller and Clay Spinuzzi, that work tells us that genre is not just form. It's a way for people to learn about their professions. So I can very well imagine an engineering course having an enormous writing component in it, where students are writing proposals, as if they'd be proposals to a financial sector of a corporation they're going to be working in. I can imagine lab reports being transformed into peer review articles. I can imagine a much stronger emphasis on oral presentations using a variety of things far beyond PowerPoint, Prezi presentations, for example. So I think the individual teacher in the classroom is best served by varying genre.
And having maybe the university culture encourage that.
Well, that's certainly being done here. Anybody listening to this should realize the enormous resources in Sweetland that have been proposed to this. You know, from an outsider's point of view, what we gather on the web, you can pretty well understand the dedication that a university gives to its students by things like the writing curriculum. And so this enormous resource that's been given here, backed financially in a sustainable way, is a tremendous articulation of the commitment that this university has to its students.
Well, Norbert, is there anything else that you'd like us to know before we sign off?
Yeah, just I think that everybody's got a role to play in things like the Common Core State Standards Initiative and what's going to happen. You know, these Common Core State Standards are the first national initiative we've had in this way, so that no matter where one is in the country, one can have some general expectation of what students are going to know. And I would be hypocritical if I didn't say that that's not part of a community, because it is. I think we need to be on guard at how these things are going to be used in the assessment situation and how those assessments are being defined. So because we're a diverse culture and because I'm part of a striver's background, and that's part of Michigan's mission as well, is to help students get an excellent education who otherwise couldn't. I think that we need to be very careful how our assessments are impacting diverse cultures. I think we need to disaggregate that data, and we need to be enormously demanding on our test developments to make sure that the diversity that we're so proud of is being maintained and continued in these assessments. And where these assessments don't serve a diverse student body, we should not be using them to make any decisions that would be influencing a student's progress through the educational system. So I think we all have a role to play in things like the Common Core Standards Initiative, and I think the role is to demand that the diversity that we have in this country be maintained and not be interrupted in any way by an industry of standardized testing.
Norbert, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Sweetland Podcast Series, Topics in Writing, recorded at the University of Michigan. For more information about the Sweetland Center for Writing, visit us on the web at lsa.umich.edu/sweetland.